Arabic name, the traditional Arabic name for Jerusalem, which is Al-Quds, related to the word Kadosh, right, the holy city, is not mentioned even once in the Quran. All of the rhetoric that you'll hear today about the Jews defiling Jerusalem, apparently it's not so important for them to mention even once in the Quran. And yet, the Jews, literally, even the Ashkenazi Jews, and I would say that as a joke, right, from the Palestinian perspective, a lot of the violence, historically, over the past 100 years, a lot of the violence against Jews has been with the understanding that the Jews are European colonists, and originally, colonizers, right? Originally, much of the violence against the Jews was specifically against the Ashkenazi, because what connection do you have to this land? You're simply coming to conquer our land. So, again, part of the simple response has been, we're not just Europeans. We've been praying for we've been mentioning our connection to this land in our prayers for 2,000 years. So, a very, very simple question. Where in our prayers do we relate to this general period and our general state of, let's call, exile? And we'll focus the question a little bit in the Shmona Esrei. Where in the Shmona Esrei do we talk about what we're experiencing most pointedly in these 3 weeks and in these 9 days? I'm inviting your response.
Bonnie Yerushalayim, Skab Shafar.
Okay, V'li Yerushalayim, Merchav Rachman Tashuv.
Hashiva
Shavtenu. Okay. There's a bracha in the Shemona Esrei, restore our judges. Okay? That's actually, even the phrase of that bracha is related to psukim that we'll see at the end this morning. Avodah Beit HaMikdash. They have the bracha of V'li Yerushalayim Yircha. We have the bracha Avodat Beit HaMikdash, which is the rabbinic name for the bracha that we say before we bow, is the bracha of Avodah. That's when the Kohanim are supposed to ascend to the platform to give the bracha. Is in the bracha of Avodah. Avodah, of course, means worship, and the most classic worship is the worship in the temple. Daniel also mentioned the bracha of Tekah b'shofar gadol l'chayrutenu. Blast the horn, the great horn, for our freedom, for our liberty. Liberty from exile. If that's not clear enough, it says, Kabtzeinu yachad me'arba kanfot ha'aretz. Collect us together from the four corners of the world. It sounds very messianic. Okay? And that's a good thing in our religion. Okay? One more. Et tzemach David avdecha mehera tatzmiach. Blossom the blossom of David your servant. Okay? Which is a reference to? The kingship, right? Mashiach is a descendant. He's a descendant of the Davidic monarchy. And we're waiting for Mashiach to come. So we're asking God to return the Davidic reign. Okay. So I didn't put the Hashiva Shavtenik Roshana on here, restore our judges. That one is definitely related. The truth is, you could argue that most of the brachas, perhaps even all of the brachas, in one way or another, are affected by, related to Mashiach and the Churban. More than that, the whole idea of Avodah being what we do in a shul, that worship is the worship of the heart, is somewhat revolutionary. Not that there wasn't worship of the heart before. In the Gemara, we're learning now about the opinion that says the tefillot were instituted, kind of conceived of, and first practiced by the avot. So that's even before the mikdash. And yet, tefillah, as we know it, was definitely a transition from the tefillah in place of the korbanot. That's the original avodah, on a national sense, is the avodah of the korbanot. Okay, so the whole tefillah really, in one way or another, expresses or reflects the galut, the exile. Nonetheless, so you know, you could add Hashiv Hashavteinu Gerushim if you want, but I would say, I think it's most felt probably in the four brachas that I mentioned. Again, fight with me about Hashiv Hashavteinu and Tekav Shafar, but at least, V'li Yerushalayim Mirchad Berachamim Tashuv, and Et Samach David Abdecha Mirat Tatzmiach. And then the last one, which again is the bracha that we call the Avudah. Now, what words in here are clear in the last bracha? In the last bracha, what words are most clearly connected to Yerushalayim? So it says, "Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu Be'amcha Yisrael Levit Vit La'atam." Hashem, you should desire your nation and their prayer. Of course, prayer really is outside the Mikdash, at least as we know it, right? So this is actually a fitting bracha for the closing of the tefillah. Notice, V'li Yerushalayim Ircha and Et Samach David are not mentioned in every single prayer. They're mentioned three times a day during the week, but those brachas do not appear on Shabbat, they do not appear on Yom Tov, they do not appear in the Musafim, though of course the Musafim are clearly about the Mikdash, but those specific brachot do not appear, and yet Ritzei is always said. Ritzei is part of the concluding three. Okay, so Ritzei is a very nice transition from the bracha of Shomea Tefillah to the conclusion, because it says, desire B'nai Yisrael, desire your nation Israel, and their tefillot. Desire their tefillot is just a half step away from saying, receive their tefillot. Okay, but then it gets more into the Mikdash because it says, Hashiv et ha'avodah lidvir beitecha. Right now we have avodah shebalev, the worship of the heart, but we want you to restore the avodah of dvir beitecha, your holy sanctuary, the house, the temple. V'ishei Yisrael utfilatam be'avat tekabel beratzon. And the fires of Israel, what is the fires of Israel in its most traditional sense? So a lot of discussion about a certain martyrdom being referred to in this prayer, right? When people give their lives, that's also mentioned in this prayer, but Yishei Yisrael most primarily means korbanot. Right, the fire offerings. Yishei Reach Nichoach LaHashem. A fire offering which is pleasing to Hashem. So Hashem, please also, be'ahava, with love, receive with desire the fire offerings of Bnei Yisrael. Okay? U'tehi l'ratzon tamid avudat Yisrael amecha. And forever, the avudat Yisrael, the worship of Yisrael, should be l'ratzon. It's beautiful, because this bracha really does synthesize and balance both the sacrifice, the Yishei Yisrael, but also the avudah in its avudah shebalev sense. In other words, this emphasis even on u'tehi l'ratzon tamid means whether there's a mikdash or not a mikdash. Tamid means perpetually and always. So in whatever form we offer our worship, we want it to be well received. And then finally, if the bracha were kind of wavering between the shul and the temple, finally the bracha seals in a very conclusive manner, "V'techazena einenu, let our eyes see your return to Zion in compassion." There's no ambiguity about that. Whereas it's possible to pray, and it's in fact obligatory to pray in Athens, if one finds himself in Athens, or Rome, or New York, or wherever one may be, at the same time, we have had for generations, for millennia, an eye towards, there's one place for Avodah, and that's really Zion. Baruch Atah Hashem HaMachazir Shechinato L'Tzion. Okay, so now let me ask you the question. Again, I focused on this bracha, because I already decided I want to talk about this bracha, and I think the implications of the other two brachot are also already a little bit more clear. But really, these last three brachas, Yerushalayim Mircha, and then Etzemach, and Ritzei, and by the way, the only one that interrupts these series is the bracha of Shema Koleinu. That's the only interruption, but otherwise we have basically three brachas consecutively that all have to do with the Messianic era, our desire for the renewal of the Mikdash and the coming of Mashiach. So, of all three of these brachas, which would you guess is the one that's the best candidate for us to modify on Tisha B'Av and make special mention of, or specially emphasize? So Jory says the first bracha, V'li Yerushalayim Yerchah. And in fact, that's what we do in practice. What am I referring to? Who knows what I'm referring to? How do we change the bracha, V'li Yerushalayim Yerchah, on Tisha B'Av?
We added something.
There's an added paragraph, right? That's the gray section. They always skip over 364 days of the year, and even on the 365th day of the year, two out of the three prayers, it's not 365, sorry, it's 353, because we're using the wrong calendar, but okay, right? So, every day we skip over that gray section, which is actually built into the bracha of V'li Yerushalayim Yerchah, and I'm talking about a paragraph called Nachem. Okay, we could read through the whole thing now, but it's in your Siddur, and I don't want to take too much time for that. So that's added. There's a special bracha. We'll talk about halachas in a second. There's a special section of a bracha which is added to V'li Yerushalayim Yerchah at the mincha tefila of Tisha B'Av, and the bracha is called, or this section is called Nachem. Interestingly, if you look it up in the Yerushalmi, the original Girsa seems to be Rachim. I shouldn't say the original Girsa. A Girsa that we have in the printed versions is Rachim, which is interesting. But anyway, we say Nachim, which means console. Rachim means to have compassion. Either way, most of the text of the Bracha is very clear. There's either one is clearly striking at the same point. And the Bracha is most appropriate, especially the way we say it, Nachim Hashem. Hashem, we want you to console. That's most appropriate in the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, because in the morning of Tisha B'Av, in the evening, and then the morning, meaning without the you, right? At the beginning of the day on Tisha B'Av, all we can do, we'll hear more about this over the course of the day, and it's reflected in the halacha that we don't wear tefillin in the morning, all we can do is wail. At least all we can hope that all we can do is to wail. And we don't want ourselves to be distracted. We don't want to be thinking about tomorrow. We want to be wallowing in the agony of now. So it's inappropriate to talk in the morning about consolation. Don't be a wimp and try to get out of dealing full front in a confrontational way and looking in the mirror at the fact that you've got red streaks across your cheek that were given to you by the divine hand itself. Feel the sting of rejection. So it's too early. It's too early to talk about consolation. So when can we talk about consolation? Again, in the way that we practice our tefillah, it's only in the afternoon. It's in the afternoon that we can really start to think about, okay, let's pick up the pieces of the destruction that lays before us. Okay. Even so, although the practice today and all of our sidurim is to say the bracha of Nachem in the bracha of V'li Yerushalayim Yerchah, according to the Gemara, that's actually not clear that it should be said that way. So let's learn a section from one of my favorite halacha svarim, which I don't learn enough, but every time I learn it, I appreciate that I've done so. So it's a halacha sefer called Aruch HaShulchan. It's over there on those shelves in the corner. And it was written about 30 years, I believe, published about 30 years before the Mishnah Berurah, which makes it about 120 years old. And it was written by a great Lithuanian scholar named Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein. Yechiel Michal Halevi Epstein. It's an extraordinary sefer. It goes by the order of the Shulchan Aruch. And as opposed to the Shulchan Aruch, which just gives you the line, which is very, very, very helpful when you just want the line. But if you want to know a little bit more about the background of the halacha and some of the concepts that feed into the halacha, the Aruch HaShulchan is a fantastic presentation of where the halacha came to be, what the concepts are, and also past the Shulchan Aruch, what's happened over the past 400 years in terms of the development of the halacha from that time. It's really a delicious sefer. I don't use that word all the time, but it's truly a delicious sefer. So in any case, Aruch HaShulchan talks about the halachas of this bracha Nachem. Since the Ifal, follow with me please in source number 2.
The Yerushalmi Perek Dalet Brachot, in the fourth Perek of Brachot in the Talmud Yerushalmi, Ita, it says the following. We have the following. B'tisha be'av, tzarich lehazkir me'in ha-me'ora. On the night of Av, you have to mention, as we do on all the other commemorative days and holidays, you have to mention something which is connected to what happened on that day. Ma'inihu, what does ma'inihu mean? What is it? Right? What is the thing that we mention? Nachem Hashem Elokeinu atavelei Tzion v'chulei. Hashem, our God, console the mourners of Zion. V'heichan omra, and where does one say this special prayer? Ba'avodah. In the blessing of Avodah. That's not Vilu Yerushalayim Mircha. That's the Ritzei Bracha. Mihu bazeh, and the Aruch HaShulchan picks up, however, with respect to this, Ananoagin Deloki Yerushalmi. Our practice is unlike the practice of the Talmud Yerushalmi. Ela maskirim otah bevirkat bonei Yerushalayim. Shakoda mechatima anu omrim nachem. Umisayimin abracha menachem tzion uvonei Yerushalayim. We place the bracha somewhere else. We place it in the li Yerushalayim Mircha. Because the and then we can actually even modify the chatima, the signature of that whole bracha, which is normally Baruch Atah Hashem Bunei Yerushalayim. On Tisha B'Av, you can't just routinely say the builder of Jerusalem. We say Menachem Tzion Uvonei Yerushalayim. There's an added significance to in this context, the afternoon Tisha B'Av, saying it's not just building Jerusalem. You are consoling Zion, and the consoler of Zion. Hashem, you are the consoler of Zion and the builder of Jerusalem. Okay. So it fits very nicely to the bracha of Bnei Yerushalayim. Nonetheless, in Se'if Bet, Mikol Makom is always the introduction to a little bit of trouble. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, I know what we do, and I can explain why we do it, but on the other hand, we are ignoring the Yerushalmi. Tzarich tam eich nasa deloke Yerushalmi, b'mashein cholik alav. Nobody says in the Yerushalmi that you should say this, nachem, in the paragraph of the Yerushalayim Mircha. So why do we ignore that? V'nir alis, and then he launches into a somewhat technical, but very, very reasonable answer. Aruch HaShulchan says, and just we could do it inside even. Nearly da'inyan kenhu dehinei b'tosefta brachot sof perakimol ita shekolel et semach David bivonei Yerushalayim. Aruch HaShulchan says, once upon a time there was a custom, there was a practice mentioned in the Tosefta. He says v'chein hu b'Yerushalmi perak dalet sham, and it also appears in the fourth parak of the Yerushalmi, that the brachas of Bnei Yerushalayim and et semach David were combined. They were said together in one bracha. Ulefize, and according to that practice, hayu elu shnei brachot bracha achat, the two brachas were one. V'lachein lo yav yicholet Yerushalmi tzakeinu brachat nechamat zion mikodem bebirkat Yerushalayim. Kevan devan yizkar malchut beit David v'nachem ein remez lazeh. This paragraph of Nachem, this prayer of Nachem, doesn't talk about the Davidic dynasty at all. It doesn't talk about Malchut Beit David. It doesn't talk about Mashiach in an explicit way. In Nachem, we're talking about Yerushalayim as such. Now again, we know from many other sources that part of the job of Mashiach is to bring about the construction of the Mikdash. But it's not really about the Mashiach directly. At least this prayer of Nachem is not directly about Mashiach. It's about Yerushalayim. And it's about that streak. Again, like I said, that red, stinging streak across our cheek that says we've been slapped in the face and we've lost Yerushalayim. We didn't lose Mashiach. We lost Yerushalayim. And moreover, you talk about the second Churban, there were no kings during the Second Temple era. There were no kings. The kingship was long lost, and yet it was possible to have a mikdash. So, at a certain level, we have to separate between the two. If that's so, it's not appropriate to mention Nachem within the context of Etzemach. And therefore, they said, well, Etzemach and Yerushalayim Mircha, if they're one bracha, then that bracha is only half connected to the consolation of Jerusalem. So it's cleaner to put it in the bracha of Hamachazush Kanetol Tzion. Okay. Aval achar kach, but afterwards, shetiknu birkat etzemach bracha bifnei atzma, ubirkat Yerushalayim ikara rak al Yerushalayim, once they separated the two and made one bracha earmarked specifically and clearly for Yerushalayim, then it didn't make sense to leave it in Machaz Yishkanto anymore. Im kein lamane achara ad achar kach. Why should we push Nachem off? So the third blessing, let's mention the first one, especially the truth is the language. Like I said, you and I have to sit for a minute, at least I do. I have to sit for a minute and think, because wait a second, Ritzei has something to do with the Mikdash. It says the Machaz Yishkanto Litzion, but it doesn't say Yerushalayim. You're talking about Nachem Yerushalayim. That seems to be a very, very clear, explicit fit. V'tov yoter, or as the Aruch HaShulchan says, say it at the first opportunity possible. Tov yoter lekadma, we want to say it earlier. V'af agav degam atan nizkar bebrikat v'nei Yerushalayim. V'chisei David, even though the truth is Aruch HaShulchan is honest, we do mention David in the bracha v'nei Yerushalayim, Mikom makom ikra de bracha hi al Yerushalayim. That's really just a mention, and clearly the bracha's major focus is Yerushalayim per se. Masha'en kin k'shev shtei abrachot biyachad, ayin kara al machut Beit David. As opposed to when the two brachas were together, really the emphasis becomes, the conceptual emphasis becomes about Mashiach, and that's not really the place for the bracha of Nachem. Okay. So he's giving a nice textual resolution to what we've done. By the way, this is important halachically. This has some halachic significance. Again, this is excerpts, but if you look at what I brought from Seif Gimel, ubitfilah kisheshachach lomar eitzal b'nei Yerushalayim yomarna be'avudah, because the bracha of Nachem was originally placed in the bracha of Avudah, so for us it still has some halachic significance. If one inadvertently in the mincha of Tisha B'Av forgets to say Nachem, where it goes, but remembers pretty soon afterwards, he could put it in the bracha of the Avodah. Okay, because it still does fit there, even if we've chosen to make it a little bit earlier. Okay, in any case, we've seen a little bit about these different brachot. We've seen that our practice about Nachem has changed a little bit. I want to come at this question from a slightly different angle. Again, Aruch HaShulchan has more authority. I should say more. Aruch HaShulchan is the authority in the room. Okay? But I want to maybe add a little bit for thought. Okay? Based on a different angle entirely. I would like to bring your attention, those of you who had to suffer through my morning Gemara Shir, probably heard me talk about the paragraphs in the Torah. It's something that, unfortunately, when we learn Gemara, we're not used to thinking about, but it's something that everybody should really pay attention to, because that's the way the Torah was given to us, that's the way the Masorah is, that the Torah has natural paragraphs. Okay, what am I talking about? When you get up to Lane and we get an Aliyah, you see that from time to time there's a space in the paragraph. You don't see that on the Chumash necessarily, unless you're using a very good Chumash. But most mashim don't really have that. They have just one little letter, and then sometimes you find that letter and say, what is the summit? What is this pay? In any case, it's very, very important to pay attention to. And the Torah is broken into its own paragraphs. Why is this so important? It helps you get a sense of what the Torah is trying to say and how the content of the Torah is organized. Okay? So let's take a look at the two parshiot that give us the instructions for building the Mishkan for a second. Okay, and let's look at the paragraphs that appear. I literally went through paragraph by paragraph, and I'm giving you the beginning of each paragraph. Okay, not exactly the first two words, but key words in the very, very beginning of each paragraph, so you know what each one is about. And I want to see if you notice something highly, highly unusual. It should really raise alarms. Okay, just let's do a quick survey. In about 2 minutes of Parshiot Truma and Tetzaveh. Okay? Sources 3 and 4. So, the beginning of Truma is Daber al B'nei Yisrael V'ikhu li Truma. What's V'ikhu li Truma? It's time for the appeal in the shul. Everybody can Close your eyes and look at another book. Right? It's time for the appeal. They're collecting all the things. What are they collecting it for? In order to build the Mishkan. Fine. Now that we have all of our material, or after you collect your materials, this is again on the level of the instructions to Moshe. Here is the plan. Okay? V'asu Aron. Start with the ark. Okay? V'asita Shulchan. Build the table. The table is where you put the Lechem HaPanim. V'asita Minorat Zahav Tahor. Build the menorah. Okay? Ve'et ha-mishkan ta'aseh, the structure of the mishkan you shall build. Ve'asita takrashim la-mishkan, build the boards. Ve'asita farochet, what's the farochet? The dividing curtain. Ve'asita ta'mizbeach, build the altar. Ve'asita et chatzar mishkan, what's the chatzar mishkan? Where you have the kiddush. Oh, sorry. Right? That's the courtyard. Okay, the major area where people are walking around, and the animals are slaughtered. Okay. Parshat Tetzaveh, Ve'ata Tetzaveh Bnei Yisrael Bikhu Eilecha. Another collection. Ve'ata Hakrev Eilecha Et Aron Achicha. What's this about? What do you think?
Making the Kohen holier.
Okay. Your brother Aaron is now going to be promoted. Okay, we need somebody who's going to officiate in this place that we've spoken about. It's not going to run on robots. So bring your brother Aaron. And now, v'asu ata ephod, they shall make the ephod, apron, thank you. V'asita mishpatzot zahav, golden chains, which are part of the ephod. V'asita choshen mishpat, the breastplate of justice, v'asita t'me'il ha'ifod, the cloak, v'asita tzitz zahav tahor, the foreplate that goes on the head, v'zeh ha'davar asher ta'aseh lehem l'kadesh otam l'chahen li. Then the procedure for how they're going to be initiated as priests, v'zeh asher ta'aseh l'amizbeach, which is further details of the initiation week, right? These are the sacrifices they should offer over the course of the week. Okay? And the last parsha in Parshat Tetzaveh, V'yasita mizbeach miktar ketoret, and you shall make an altar on which to burn the incense. Gentlemen, there are a number of things here which demand a little bit more explanation, but what would you say, and the only right answer, of course, is the one I'm thinking of. So what would you say, what would you say that I say, is the most unusual piece of this, or at least the most out of place piece of this list? If you try to think about the sequence, if you try to think, please focus for a minute. I know I just gave you two whole parshas in literally 2 minutes. But think about the sequence of commandments. What is grossly out of place? And it's not just me. We'll see a couple of the most important commentaries noticed this several hundred years ago.
The Ketoret?
The Ketoret! Why is that out of place?
Doesn't it have to do with the Kohanim or the dresses or anything?
We finished talking about all of the utensils last parsha. This whole parsha is clearly all about the Kohanim. It's all about how the Kohanim are initiated, how they're dressed, what their role in the Mishkan is supposed to look like, at least look like, right? But in terms of the vessels, again, I have nothing against the Ketoret at all, right? Nothing against the incense Mizbeach. But that's part of the furniture. So once you were talking about the structure, what, you forgot? Right? We know. No, we didn't forget. But if you're talking about the installations of the Mishkan in Parshat Truma, that's where it should go. Okay, we could maybe discuss. Should it be first? Should it be last? Should it be third? I don't know. But it definitely doesn't go after the Kohen's already dressed. Oh yeah, now these dresses also make a Mizbeach. I mean, they didn't really do it that way. But that's how it kind of sounds. That's how it kind of sounds. Okay? So the Mefarshim, and we'll point out here Ramban and Sephorno. Ramban is, of course, the great 13th century Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, Spanish authority, wrote extraordinary commentaries on the Chumash and on the Gemara and works of Halacha and works of Kabbalah. So the Ramban, again, Rav Lichtenstein, I once heard from Rav Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, everybody agrees, or if everybody agrees, that Rashi is the number one commentary on the Chumash, that Rashi is the beginning of commentary on the Chumash, right? Then almost without question, Ramban is number two. Okay? So Ramban makes the following comment. V'yasita mizbeach miktar ketoret, hine mizbeach haketoret mina kelim apnimiim haya. The incense altar was one of the internal installations. It was one of the kelim, the utensils. Ra'ui shiyazkirenu im ha-shulchan b'ha-menorah shu-munachimen. Should have been mentioned alongside the shulchan, the table, and the menorah, the candelabra, because that's where it sat. That's where it was positioned within the Mishkan, near those two. V'chein yizkiran b'maseh b'parashat vayakel. And then when the Torah talks about exactly how the Mishkan was indeed constructed, that is also where the Mizbach Ketoret is listed, because that's where it belongs. So when push comes to shove, that is how they constructed it. Aval hatam lahazkir, and therefore, right, read between the lines, it's unusual, the Ramban says, and surprising, that we find in Mizbeach Ketoret is mentioned over here. So he says, aval hatam lahazkiro kan, but the reason that it is mentioned here, achara mishkan, after the mishkan, v'chol kelav, and after all of the utensils and installations, v'ha korbanot, and even the sacrifices which are mentioned as part of the initiation of the Kohanim, is ba'avur she'amar b'tashlum ha'kol v'nikdash b'chvodi, is because the Torah says at the conclusion of all of it that this will bring about, it shall be sanctified through my glory, v'shachanti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, and I will reside my presence among the children of Israel. Amar ki od yitchayev lahem she'yasu mizbeach miktar ketoret lehaktir lichvod Hashem. The impetus, the motivation for building the Mizbeach Ketoret, the function within the Mishkan, is, the Ramban says, and now I'm going to read between the lines as is absolutely necessary, as distinct from everything else. Because otherwise it should have been in line with everything else. But everything else has some function, and this is for the unique function of lichvod Hashem. Doesn't quite explain why the Mizbeach Ketoret is lichvod Hashem. Nonetheless, it's clear that again it has this distinct function of being lichvod Hashem. Somehow everything else has another purpose, a lofty purpose, a necessary purpose, a holy purpose, but this is a part. This is lichvod Hashem. Okay, there's a similar approach within the Sforno. Sforno is an Italian early Acheron, I believe 16th century. And he says, V'lo huzkar, source number 6, V'lo huzkar zeh mizbeach im sha'ar hakelim b'parshat shruma. This is not mentioned with all the others. So now the Sforno is going to show us exactly what Lichvod Hashem is excluding. In other words, everything else served a different function. What was everything else to serve? So some of the other things were Lehashkin Akel Yitbarach B'tocheinu, to have Hashem's divine presence among us. I'm going to skip next line. Gam lo haya inyano lehorid mar'eh kvodo b'bayit, and not to bring down the appearance of his kavod. Aval, and again, he brings a couple of sources, proofs for that. Aval haya inyan zeh mizbeach lechaved et hakel yitbarach. And then he comes to a similar expression, what the Ramban says, and this is underlined, second to last line.
The point was to honor Hashem. Acharei bo'o lekabel beratzon avodat amo bekorbanot haboker ve'erev. After Hashem has come down to favorably receive the avodah, the worship, through the sacrifices. Okay. Let's take a step back. I think it's still a little bit ambiguous. At least to me, it's a little bit ambiguous. What lechabed et Hashem means exactly, and again, how that's distinct from the other roles, or from the roles of the other parts of the Mishkan. Let's talk for a second, just a moment, really. So we're not going to do very much inside here, but I want to point two short selections. There are many more that we could look at. We're not going to read all these inside anyway. But two short selections from the Navi, and that's the other sheet that you have. Okay, the first selection is source number 7, Shmuel Bet, which is talking about Shmuel Bet Perek Zayin. David HaMelech gets the inspiration or the notion that he has to build a mikdash. Vayehi ki yashav HaMelech bebeito v'Hashem iniach lo misaviv mikol ha'ibav. When everything was good for the king and he was sitting at home, all fine and dandy, so he said, "Vayomer Melech al Natan Anavi," said to Natan, the prophet, "Re'ena anochi yoshev bebeit arazim va'aron elokim yoshev betoch hayiriyah." Something is wrong over here. Here I am sitting in a very, very fine palace made of cedar, and the Ark of God is sitting in the yiriyah, in the curtains, meaning to say, that's highly inappropriate. And I want to do something about it. Why should Hashem, so to speak, be residing in the Mishkan, which is really a temporary structure, when I'm in a formidable palace, as permanent could be? And that's really the motivation to move over from Mishkan to Mikdash. That was David's epiphany moment. And Hashem responds to him at length with a great adoration. David has said something so special, and in fact, Hashem will allow his son to do it. Later we'll see David himself, tragically, cannot perform the function himself, but David is consoled through the fact that his son will carry on his legacy in that way and build a mikdash. What's the motivation here? The motivation is simply... it's high time that we build a proper way to receive the Shekhinah. In source number 8, which we're not going to read at all inside, so I'm going to try to stick to the schedule. This is the Haftarah of this Shabbos, the Shabbos that always precedes Tisha B'Av. So you'll hear it read by the Baal Koreh, and I highly encourage you to learn it beforehand, because it is beautiful. It is moving, and it is very, very, very strong. And of course, it expresses the essence of Hashem's disappointment with us in deciding that there will be a destruction. Just want to point out a very short section over here. Let's start with verse Yud Aleph. Lama li rov zivchechem yomar Hashem. Why do I need the abundance of your slaughterings? Savati olot elim b'chelav mireim v'dam parim uchvasim v'atudim lo chavatzi. I'm sorry, I'm not going to translate it all again in the interest of time, but you can follow along in the English if you want. The source from verse 11, and it's on the back side over here. I have enough of the sacrifices. Ki tavo'u lira'ot panai mi v'kesh zot mi'lchem remos chatzirai. Lo tosifu avi minchat shav ketora to'evai li. Chodesh Shabbat Kro Mikra Lo Uchal Aven Matzara. Chodeshem Moadechem Sana Nafshi Aluayim La Latarach Nileitu Neso Ufarischem Kapichem Alim Einai Mikem Gam Ki Tarbu Tfila Eineni Shomea Yidechem Damim Maleu. Rachatu Izaku Aziru Hasiru Roma Alechem Mineged Einai Chibu Hareya Limdu Etev Dershu Mishpat Ashu Chamos Shiftu Yatom Rivu Almana. If you ask somebody off the street, preferably somebody not too mature, why would God destroy the temple?
I would guess the most natural answer would be, someone who's never heard anything about it before, the most natural answer, I would guess, or let's work with me, might be because God doesn't like the temple. Because the sacrifices are bad. Because the performance in there is not up to snuff. That's not what it says here. God doesn't say, I don't like your sacrifices because you're not giving them properly. I don't like the way you're lighting the menorah. What he says is, it's meaningless. You can do it perfectly, but if it's not reflecting goodness, if it's not reflecting justice, if it's not reflecting honesty, and it's not reflecting something more, then I don't want it. You'll go through the motions, but it's disgusting. It's a pain. If I may, and I'm not sure the Sforno is going this direction, I'm not even quite sure the Ramban is going this direction either. If I may, let's look at the Ketoret again for just a moment. The Ketoret serves a distinct function as opposed to the rest of the Mishkan in the following way, and the Mikdash, the Mizbeach Ketoret. All of the other things are about, if the king is here, this is how we must relate to the king. This is what the king demands. This is the proper procedure in front of the king. But let's ask a basic question. Who said the king wants to be here? And if the king wants to be here, that in and of itself is the kind of thing that we really just must take a step back and recognize. The Mizbeach Ketoret, and again, it could be this is what the Ramban means, but I'm not, you know, if he means something else, I don't want to read into him. But at least the question, sharing the same question as the Ramban and the Sforno, Mizbeach Ketoret serves a different function. Part of the function, and the Sforno does lean in this way a little bit, at the end of the day, Hashem has come and received our Korbanot. We received the Korbanot, so why is there room for any more? Because that in and of itself is the kind of thing that we need to be appreciative of. We can't take that for granted. Part of the tragedy, perhaps the greatest tragedy in all, of the loss of the Mikdash is not we can't show off to God. Does God need us to show off to Him? It's not that we can't show Him what we're capable of. God needs that. The greatest tragedy is the slap in the face. Is the fact that God said, I don't have time for your korbanot. I don't have interest in your korbanot. When you're worthy, I'll come down to Har HaBayit, and then we'll talk about the way to treat me once I'm in Har HaBayit. But you're not even worthy. I'm not going to give you time of day. That's the most hurtful thing. That's the most tragic thing of all of it. I want to bring this back again. Where I started is... That we could think about this perhaps for a couple minutes or a few painfully slow hours on Sunday morning. If we're really from, maybe from after Shabbat till Sunday night, even more from Friday night to Sunday night, right? Maybe for a whole 3 weeks. But really, and again, this is an epiphany that I will give you the benefit of the doubt that you all had a long time ago. But really, this is the kind of thing we should be thinking about three times a day, every day, every day of the year. And that is with one single word in the Shemona Esrei. We normally have a rule in the brachot of Shemona Esrei that the beginning and the end of the bracha are supposed to be parallel. They're supposed to be closely related. Okay? Arech aleinu et hashana hazot, baruch ata Hashem v'arech hashanim. It's all about shanim. Well, how do you get from Ritzei to Machazir Shechinato L'Tzion? Why don't you say Hachazir or L'Tzion Hachazir or something? And the answer is, we're asking God to return to Zion because we're asking God Ritzei. We ask God, please just want us. We want you. We need you to tolerate us. Obviously, we need you to tolerate us. We need you to continue to give to us, to give us health, to give us food, to give us rain. But then we ask for a little bit more. Please, God, want us.